This episode is made possible by our sponsors, CSU Ram Zone, powered by the CSU Bookstore, a great sponsor of our Pick'em and Bracket Contest all year long, Ginger and Baker, which is our favorite restaurant on the planet, and of course, our title sponsor of this podcast, Peterson Toyota. It's 2024, and you may be thinking this is the year for a new car. Well, let me introduce you to the all-new 2024 Land Cruiser with no fuss, no muss, just the way you remember it, with prices starting in the mid-$50,000 range. Land Cruiser brings back the thrill and excitement of exploring unfamiliar terrain with its remarkable capabilities and legendary reliability, while paying homage to its historic roots of over 65 years. Peterson Toyota can hook you up with a test drive. They're your local Toyota dealer serving Fort Collins, Loveland, Windsor, and Tynmouth. They've been doing so for more than 50 years. Not only will you find the latest Toyota models, you'll also find friendly and accommodating staff eager to assist you. You'll also receive first-class attention, whether it be for a service appointment, help picking out the right part for your Toyota, or test driving a new or pre-owned vehicle. Whatever you're looking for, Peterson's expert staff will help you find the one that's right for you, all at competitive pricing and financing. Peterson strives to be the best in everything they do, and they will take care of you. If you're in the market for a new or used vehicle, please give Peterson Toyota first shot at your business. Thanks. Enjoy the show. Welcome, everybody, to Ram Nation Radio. I am Joel Cantalamessa. Today, we've got a good show for you. We'll have on Joe Parker, CSU's athletic director. Mike Rowe and I will have a great conversation with him coming up in a few minutes. We're going to ask him about the seemingly low announced attendance at Tuesday night's basketball game. It seemed like a much larger crowd than 5,100 people, but we'll ask him about that. We'll ask him what they're doing to keep Nico. Again, we seem like we ask him that every week or every month. And I know that's something that you guys are all curious about. We'll ask him about how the basketball TV selection process works, because we're as miffed as you guys are that the next three games will not be on TV. We'll also ask about the implications of the Oregon State and Washington State presidents announcing that they're going to put their non-football athletic programs in the West Coast Conference for a couple of years rather than align with the Mountain West. We'll also ask about the NIL versus athletic-specific donations, because that's a question I have. It's a question people have. Like, should I be putting my money towards NIL? Should I put it into the Ram Club? You know, so we'll ask all those things, plus some questions you guys have submitted on the message boards recently as well. It's our first podcast of 2024. It's been a couple weeks since we've been on, basically because we filled in a day for Brady Hall our last week for his show while he was out. That was fun, although a little stressful, dealing with clocks and commercial breaks. And, you know, you gotta decide on the fly, do I have time to squeeze in one more question and maybe risk getting that our interviewee getting cut off? So those things are a little more stressful. You definitely have to prepare. I don't know how he does that every day, 3 hours. But that's why we love him. He does a good job over there. And he covers so much great Ram talk. And I highly encourage you, if you don't listen to Brady Hall, tune in. He has a lot to offer CSU fans for sure. But we had three great conversations that day. We had Susie Wargin on, and we talked a lot about the Broncos with her and the Russell Wilson dynamic of him getting benched. We also had Braden Fowler-Nicolosi on. It was really good talking to BFN. And then we also had Jeff Grammer from the Albuquerque Journal on to talk Mountain West hoops. And of course, Steve Ivey, the Swole Cracker himself, joined us in studio for that final hour as we interviewed Jeff. So good stuff there talking about hoops. But one thing about BFN, we had a little bit of a technical difficulties. He had a couple bad connections on his phone call, but so we had to get it back. And that's another stress that you're trying to deal with. All stuff that we don't have to deal with when you're dealing with the podcast. I can edit, I can delete, I can stop, I can restart. But when you're on live radio, you're dealing with it and all the repercussions that come with it. So anyway, we got him back on. We asked, one of the things I really wanted to know was, look, there was a report that you were offered $600,000 to transfer, go to another school. What made you want to stay at CSU? And essentially what it came down to, he says, look, I looked at the reason why anybody would be interested in me transferring. And the reason why I was attractive as a transfer was because of the program that I'm in and the coaches who have put me in a position to succeed and the scheme that we're in and the way that we throw the ball around. Those are all the reasons why anyone would even be paying attention to my numbers and being interested as a sophomore next year. He goes, so the grass isn't always greener. I want to be loyal to my coaches. I love my coaches. I love my teammates. And he wanted to make a statement to his team that, look, Yeah, we have a few guys that are leaving, and he doesn't begrudge anybody for doing what's best for them. He goes, but for me, staying was the best thing for me. And he loved the fact that Torrey Horton was also staying, and how talked about how important it was that both those guys made those announcements. And same with JRS, Justice Ross Simmons, who said he was staying, and just getting that out there to the teammates and just saying, look, we're committed. We want everyone to be committed. There's big things to come. I just thought it was really, really mature of him. I love the loyalty. In this day and age, you're not going to have a lot of that. But when you can get the key guys to stay loyal and to speak that way, I was impressed. I was really impressed by that. So check it out. It's all available. If you go to the Brady Hull Show on any of your podcast platforms, you can check out those recordings. But a couple of great interviews and conversations that day as well. Hoops game on Tuesday night, the 5,100 fans in attendance that they announced. I know that the It sure seemed to me like it was bigger. There were a couple of the corners were a little bit more sparse, but overall, it certainly seemed bigger than that. There was a lot of commentary on the post game. Brian Roth had mentioned, even though it was announced a smaller crowd, the crowd made up for it in noise and energy. I actually disagreed with that a bit. Yes, it did get loud at key moments. But I thought in general, it was just missing that underlying energy throughout the game. The beginning of the game was dead. It just felt like it was lacking. And there were periods during the game where it just felt like a morgue. I mean, you could hear a pin drop as the game was being played. Just didn't have that usual buzz that you would have when the students are full. So I was like, this is scary, because New Mexico came out with an inspired effort right off the tip. They came out ready to play. They hit some shots. They were playing tough defense. CCU got off to a little bit of a slow start. And I thought this, the combination of New Mexico being able to hit shots and play defense like that with a less than stellar crowd, I thought it was going to be tough. But this team is just so impressive. They don't have guys that go off for 30 points regularly, right? They just play well as a team. And it's really a privilege to watch the way that they move the ball. They share the ball. They play great team defense. And I think that's why CSU is becoming the darlings of the national media. You look on social media, and there are national pundits that rave about the style of basketball being played in Fort Collins. That is helped drastically by a fifth-year senior in Isaiah Stevens. He just gives you comfort knowing that when he's out there, this team's not going to lay an egg. They're going to come to play. He got everything under control. When things get bad, you can get the ball in his hands, and everything just calms down. And he's just complimented so well by some of these older guys, these transfers. Nate Clifford has been just an amazing fill-in. Joel Scott has just gives you another level at the big position. And then you've got guys that are coming off the bench where you don't really lose any productivity. Joe Palmer always brings great energy off the bench, but I thought the defensive energy and efforts off the bench by Bemba and Tavy Jackson on Tuesday were huge. And I just love that this team accepts its roles for the sake of winning. And I hope that lasts. I think they have the character on this team that it will last throughout the season. There certainly could be a few guys that would grumble because they're used to getting more minutes. I think that they're all enamored with the winning ways. It's reflected in the national standings, the national rankings, the net rankings. So it's impressive. The other funny thing is, I thought that this little Twitter battle, the social media battle between CSU basketball and CU basketball this week has been funny. The guys in Boulder on the CU Buffs Twitter account made a little comment about last week how the best point guards come to Boulder to play. Their social media accounts have been pumping up KJ Simpson. Actually made kind of a incorrect statement that he's the only one in the country to be shooting 56.3% from the field, 47.9% from the field from 3-point range, and 85.9% from the free throw line. They'd neglected to acknowledge that just down the road, that Nate Clifford is 55, 45, and 85 in those same categories. It's a pretty big gaffe considering Nate just played for the Buffs last year. And I suspect it wasn't a gaffe. I think it was more of a shot, or somehow they just completely overlooked it, which was a joke. Neil Wolk was, I think, the one behind that. He backtracked later, saying that he forgot to put in a qualifier of a minimum of 5 field goals a game. But so then today, CSU's Twitter or X.com account trolled back again and added that a second CSU player now meets those same metrics. Pat Cartier is one of two players in the nation shooting 55 field goals, 55% field goals, 45% from three, and 85% free throws, with a minimum of five field goals made a game. So they threw that in there. So I love a good natured social media battle. Pretty funny. But so lots of good stuff. It's so fun to be watching good basketball. We're going to get this all season long. I think New Mexico is really good. Clearly the foul trouble on Jalen House hurt them. He can light it up quickly. And you saw him do that. Once he got back on the court, he was in his foul trouble. So he sat out a lot of the game. They put him in late and he just started lighting up the scoreboard real quick. But I thought his antics were a little babyish for sure. He was getting after it with the crowd a little bit. His emotions run high. I'm sure he was frustrated with the foul trouble that he had and getting, you know, he came back in after sitting for most of the first half. And then part of the second half comes in, picks up a quick fourth foul, starts yelling at his coach to leave him in the effing game. They did not. They took him out. They punched the chair, went off to the locker room for a little bit, came back, seemed to calm down. And when he got in the game, he affected it. Thought it was funny that after the game, he went over to some fans that were ribbing him throughout the game, kind of talking smack with them all game. And he went up and pretend like he was going to give him a high five and did the little whiff thing behind the head and was kind of laughing about it. So I thought that was funny. It was good to see he was being good natured about it, especially probably in the heat of a loss. But that team is talented. They'll win a lot of games. They're definitely play a different brand of basketball than CSU does. I mean, they defend well. They create turnovers. But offensively, they don't have near the sharing of the ball. It's a lot more one-on-one. So it's different. It's a different brand. And they've got a lot of guys that just want to shoot, right, and get their points. They did kill CSU with the pick and roll. But the Rams really clamped down the second half. They did what they do. And they wore them down with depth. And that's going to be the case. CSU's depth is just a weapon. So the Rams will face Utah State at 7 p.m. Mountain Time Saturday. That's going to be streamed on the Mountain West Network. After their win over New Mexico Tuesday night, they've moved up to 15th in the net rankings. They came into the week number 13 in the AP, number 14 in the coaches. It's just, you can't buy this publicity that they're getting 6 weeks in a row of being in the polls. Utah State, by the way, just a really surprising, interesting story this year, especially you lose coach Ryan Odom. Everyone thought he was, you know, a really good coach. He was a very good coach, but you lose him after 2 years to go to VCU. Utah State returned no returning minutes and somehow is 13-1 this year. They rolled Air Force at the Academy Tuesday, 88-60. And while their non-conference slate has not been that impressive this year, you know, their lone loss, I think, was an overtime loss at Bradley. And their best wins came over San Francisco, a good team, at Santa Clara. They won at Santa Clara and they beat Cal Irvine. Those are the basically the hallmarks of their 13 game win streak, or not streak, their win tally. But they're doing it with no returning players with any real experience. It's just stunning. First year coach Danny Sprinkle came from Montana State. Hit the transfer portal. He's hit on a bunch of good players. He's benefiting from great play from the Montana State transfers. He brought over two guys, a wing, great Osabor, and guard Darius Brown. Osabor is averaging 17 points a game. Brown's averaging nearly 11. They got two other guys averaging double-digit points in senior guard Ian Martinez, almost 13 points a game, and freshman guard Mason Falslev at 11 points a game. The Aggies are looking, you know, like they're positioning themselves or getting in position to be in position, as Nico likes to say, to make a surprise return at the NCAA tournament after losing to Missouri last year in Sacramento. It would be a really amazing feat considering most people left them for dead when Ryan Odom suddenly left them for dead at the end of last season. Consider how amazing this is. Ryan Odom was just 2 years into his five-year contract, and a week after making the NCAA tournament, he immediately goes out the door to VCU. And before that, before he got here 2 years ago, it was Craig Smith leaving 3 years into his contract. He left for Utah after two NCAA tournaments. You know, but what's harder to stomach is with Odom, it wasn't a case of a coach leaving for a high major job. It was going to a school in the Atlantic 10, which is not as strong of a conference as the Mountain West. But I think Odom does have ties to the area, having worked previously there at Virginia Tech and American University. I think he, I haven't been able to find if he got a big jump in salary. I'm assuming that that had to be something factored in there, but still an odd departure. But good to see Coach Sprinkle, Danny Sprinkle, keeping Utah State playing good basketball. The team needs strong teams throughout. Utah State's got that basketball brand. So I like the fact that they are hitting the ground running. And that should be a heck of a game. It's going to be tough at the Spectrum. It's never easy to play there, never easy to win there. I believe the students will still be out. So maybe the raucousness of that arena may not be what it might normally be, but we will find out. The Rams need to be at their best. We'll see if they get Josiah Strong back. It would be great to have a full complement of players, have your full roster. He just adds another shooting touch from the outside. And obviously his defense is one of the best on the team. So that could really impact and take the Rams to the next level. So lastly, the women coming off their tough overtime loss at San Diego State last week. They host UNLV at Moby this Saturday. It's a 1 p.m. tip-off. That's also on the Mountain West Network. And that one is actually picked up by Local 3, the TV channel in Denver. So interesting that they are getting their games picked up off the streaming platform onto local television, but the men have not. We'll ask Joe Parker about that when we have him on here shortly. All right, before we catch up with Mike Rowe and Joe Parker, let me tell you about Ginger and Baker. Stop in for an amazing dinner at the Cache where you can enjoy fine steaks, chops, good whiskey, or select from their award-winning wine list. And the cafe restaurant just dropped their winter menu a couple weeks ago. Come on in for some of Chef Ryan's comfort food done right. Some of the highlights include tiramisu French toast, sloppy Joe egg rolls, pumpkin apple bisque, bison chili, quinoa stuffed squash, blackened salmon, and Ginger and Baker's classic pot pie roast made with Wagyu beef. Ginger Baker also features a coffee shop, event spaces, a market, and a teaching kitchen, the latter of which has great events all month long, but they sell out quick, so you got to get in early. I mean, listen to some of these upcoming classes they have next week: pasta from scratch, winter in Paris, Italian countryside cooking, the perfect steak, Asian street food, and much more. Check out gingerandbaker.com/calendar for a full list of classes and other events. This place is amazing, guys. Support our friend Ginger Graham. Treat yourself to a world-class experience at our favorite place, Ginger and Baker. All right, super happy to welcome in CSU Athletic Director Joe Parker. Joe, it's been a month now. Hope your holidays were good. Happy New Year. How has your little break been?
Yeah, it was fantastic. Much needed. We had such a busy fall. For whatever reason, it felt like we were more on the go this last fall than almost any other. But we were home, which was great. No travel, didn't have to get on a plane, didn't have to jump in a car. We just stayed home, and our kids made it back from Dallas, where they live now. And so it was just a nice family weekend.
That's good. Well, saw you and Jen walking on the courts a couple nights ago at Moby. Tried to yell down to you, but you're the mayor, shaking hands and entertaining people. But another fun game at Moby. This team just continues to take care of business, even with
Yeah.
injuries and whatnot, and students out of town. So it was good to get that win.
Yeah, we're starting to get back to full strength with the roster. Good to see Jalen Lake back on the court. It sounds like Josiah Strong is going to work his way back in the lineup here pretty soon. So now the key is just to remain healthy and keep playing as well as we have been playing. I felt like New Mexico, they're as good as a team we're going to see all year, probably. So hopefully, just got to win all the games in Moby. So that's going to be important for people to show up. And I felt like the crowd, our announced attendance was a little over 5,100, but to me, it felt bigger than that. So I
Going
don't
to ask
know.
you about that. We need to do an audit. That seemed a lot bigger.
Yeah, I thought so as well. So I didn't really dig into it, but that's what we kind of pushed out on game day, on an internal text message. But people were loud. People, it made a difference too, I think. So.
Yeah. Well, you know what happens now. We've asked it the last couple months, but with the success, everyone's panicked. Like, what do we got to do to keep Nico? And right now you're just embedded in the season, enjoying the ride, right? But we had Nico on, I think it was just the week before we had you on last month, and asked him a lot of great questions about what makes you tick, what makes you want to stay at a place. And I think we talked about this last month with you, but he basically said, I would love to see CSU basketball become the fabric of Fort Collins, and just continue to see it grow and have people just hop on board and pack the arena every night and continue to see investments in the program and in the arena and coaches' salaries and things like that. So is this stuff that's just constantly on your mind, or do you truly just say, look, you know, we wait till the end of the season and we discuss any retention models then?
It's always on my mind. You know, we've got the good fortune right now to, you know, when we renewed and extended and had that last conversation with Nico, you know, what we did was a 5-year term, but we put 3 1-year extensions in. So this year, when exercised, it'll put him on 5 years remaining on his current deal. So really that contract got us, you know, possibly to really an 8-year term. And those renewal extensions can take place anytime after July or January 1st. And it does not have to be mutually agreeable. So either party can inform the other that they intend to exercise that 1-year extension. I think first year I did it, second year Nico did it, and the third year is yet to happen. But, you know, you can imagine that that's likely to occur. And then I think, you know, we'll see what we can do in season. It's always kind of difficult to really talk intensively. You know, I mean, Nico's got a job to do. He's going to remain focused. You know, we've got to do what we can to continue to support him through the remainder of this season. But I would envision a time as we get close to the end of the season to start talking about what we need to do to continue to enhance and build the program. You know, you look back, we talk a lot about how, you know, what can we do to model Gonzaga? You know, they've been a program that's been remarkable in their ability to continue to grow it and sustain it. And, you know, it takes resources. It takes, I think in their case, they had, you know, strong alignment within the leadership model, the university and athletics and the coaching leadership. So continuity, I think, is important in those moments. You know, a shared common vision is, you know, we've done a really nice job of, you know, being able to provide the things that Nico has said is important. You know, we did the basketball locker room renovations, really, really new locker rooms. There wasn't anything over there on that side of the arena. And, you know, if people haven't seen those spaces, you know, we published, you know, images on social media, but that put us at the high watermark of the Mountain West Conference for sure, I think, in locker room facilities. You know, so you just got to continue to find ways to build and enhance. You know, thankfully, the Green and Gold Guard is doing some really good things to help our student athletes in the NIL space. We got to continue to grow that. And, you know, that's becoming increasingly more important across all of our programs. To show, you know, an ability to support students through that now no longer really unique opportunity, but it's been with us for over 2 years now. So it's, you know, that's got to continue to move forward. And in our case, you know, I hope people understand this. You know, we are who we are, right? I mean, we're Colorado State. We're not, you know, our budget's $52 million a year across the board to support 16 varsity programs. You know, people are responding to wanting to be in Moby Arena to support this program, but, you know, we haven't had consecutive years of sellouts with, you know, increasing season ticket, you know, revenues. So, you know, we all got to do our part and just kind of figure out a way to you know, continue to grow the program. And that's what we'll talk about as the season ends. And you know, hopefully we can continue to put compelling programming together that keeps, you know, Nico and his staff engaged around this, you know, but you always have to plan for contingencies too. So, you know, we'll deal with whatever occurs and we'll manage through it. And, you know, fortunately, when you have successful programs, you know, it, even if you have a coaching departure, you've left it in a better position. And hopefully that's a springboard to a continued enhanced future.
Right. A quick question on who Who mans the shot clock at Moby? Is that one of our volunteers? Is part of someone on the official officiating staff? Because it seems like we've had a few issues with the shot clock, and we had one again the other night. But I was just curious as I don't know, who is that someone on that just the volunteer in the
Yeah,
arena?
it's a combination of our volunteer crew and then our own full-time staff that manages that. Matt Selgi does a great job. He's kind of the main game day management person. So when you see the officials come up, to the DV Sport replay system, he's a fellow that's turned the monitor around for the officials to take a look at. And I think we've had some issues with, kind of the system itself. So we're, much like, and that's a mission critical activity, obviously, but much like the sound system and, our aging video board, there's just, at some point you've got to be able to make the capital investment to upgrade those systems so that they can continue to, serve at the highest level possible. And I think we're probably hitting a po point where we got to do a full holistic review of all those things and put a plan in place to make sure that we don't have any critical failures that have a deep impact on a contest for sure.
I had a question on, and this has been a consternation on the message boards, but how do the TV basketball selections work? Is it at the beginning of the year, there's a hierarchy? FS1 says we want this, this, and this. CBS Sports takes the next, and then it's just set in stone for the season. There's no flexibility. It seems that way because our next three games are all on the Mountain West network streamed. And so I know that's a little annoying considering we're a top 13 team in the country, and we want to be seen across the country a little bit more.
They've got to make a little bit of a forecast with a crystal ball at the beginning of the season on how they're going to manage the broadcasting schedule. And there's not, once it's set, there's really not much flexibility that they can adjust to. So hopefully, if we continue to have success through this season, that'll have impacts on how they, make their selections next year, and we don't see the situation that we're in this year with a lot of the, as you pointed out, next three games on stream.
Along those lines, I did see that the women's team has, when they're on the Mountain West network, they have a few games that are picked up by Local 3, the channel in Denver. Why is that not an option for some of these men's games? Is that just at their discretion, or is it something you can push?
It's at their discretion. We do reach out to, every partner that might have an interest. Chris Ferris has done a nice job in developing that relationship with Local 3. It came to us through another relationship that really only, unfortunately remained in place for I think a year or two. That was with Avaca. They were kind of a startup sports broadcasting entity, and ultimately they closed down, but they helped us open up that relationship with Local 3, and so we'll still be able to explore those opportunities.
I mean,
Is there any chance? Is there any chance that some of these games coming up could get flexed onto Channel 3?
possibly, yeah. I know Chris and Kyle Neves have had some conversations. I saw some email threads going around about some interest. But the answer is, if you want to watch CSU basketball, maybe you should just make your way up to Fort Collins
Well, it's
be
hard to get to Logan and then Boise and then Laramie in the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, I got it. I got it. The guys, I saw them jump on the bus about midday. They're heading down to DIA to fly, and they're going to be out for 6 days. So
Wow.
hopefully, they packed enough clean underwear to make it through the trip.
So that
Right.
was a question that somebody had for me. Well, the basketball team will go to Boise after Logan.
Yeah, so school doesn't start till the Tuesday after Martin Luther King Day, so just more efficient to keep them out on the road instead of bringing them back and sending them out again. So we'll pay for some extra hotel nights, but they'll be able to manage. No school makes it a little bit easier to have a decision like that.
Well, the TV thing, I mean, for us, once you figure out the app, You know, it's really nice to have the Mountain West just on a Roku, just comes right up on your TV anyway. But you think about the average or the casual viewer that's not going to log into an app, right? They're going to want to scroll through on a TV. So it would be great to see some of those games picked up. But big stretch coming up for hoops. I want to ask you about the recent announcement that OSU, Oregon State, and Washington State are going to put their non-football programs into the West Coast Conference and what implications you think that has. For me, I think that's a sign that they're not real gung-ho about backfilling a Pac-12 or just merging with the Mountain West, and probably are leaving the door open for handpicking schools to rebuild that Pac-12. Or how do you read that, and why do you think that they went that route?
Yeah, I think they're still, you know, they're trying to create as much flexibility for a future that they may have some control over that they possibly can. You know, they've gotten a couple favorable rulings from the courts on how they're going to manage the dissolution of the Pac-12 and possibly who's going to control and you know, be making the main decisions on how to divide up, you know, revenue and then the assets. So yes to all the above, Joel. You know, I think too, I haven't had a recent conversation with anyone from either of those campuses, but you know, I think with, you know, everyone anticipating, you know, some movement maybe with the ACC, do they expect that, you know, there'll be opportunities created that they may be able to take advantage of possibly. So, you know, maybe that's why they want to, at least in the next, you know, 12 to 18 to 24 months, you know, keep flexibility in their own decision-making. Everything that I've heard is, you know, there's really probably little or no interest from the Big 12 in taking any of those remaining two schools, you know, but does the instability in the ACC, you know, create some opportunity? Maybe, you know, for us, we're, you know, what we always have to do, you know, whether it's CSU or the broader Mountain West, we just got to be the best version of who we can be, you know, and the fact that we've got, you know, great basketball being played in our league right now, you know, that, you know, just before the start of conference play, the top five programs had an aggregate win-loss results or record of 56-6. So, you know, we're playing incredible basketball out here in the Western United States in the Mountain West Conference, and just got to keep doing that and, you know, continue to build our football programs and our women's basketball programs and the volleyball programs and all the other ones. But, you know, we'll see what the future brings.
Did that decision catch Mountain West leadership off guard a little bit, or are you off guard, or was it surprising?
No, not at all. We had conversations about football first. You know, part of me, and I think I may have said this in one of the previous podcasts, you know, I mean, I like the idea that we're helping, you know, ultimately, you know, I think it's, but really at some point, you know, the collegiality has to stop, and you just got to force them, you know, if ultimately we want, you know, an integrated league, you know, you got to make it difficult for them. You know, we're going to compete with them next year in football. So, you know, you want to see them level set to our resource abilities as soon as possible. You know, the more that they've got to pay coaches and do enhanced things beyond what we're able to do, that's, you know, creating competitive advantage for them. Mm-hmm. When it came to basketball, the ADs had a discussion with conference leadership, and we actually asked them to tap the brakes a little bit. You know, it didn't make complete sense to, because their interest was affiliate membership. So unlike a scheduling alliance, they wanted to be able to participate for our conference championship. They wanted to, you know, be able to earn the AQ. And we've got great basketball within our own peer group. And so it just didn't seem right to kind of open up that scheduling model to them, particularly in an affiliate membership way. So, you know, they had talked about it for a while. If it had been sort of a combined deal, football, men's basketball, women's basketball, It was going to be a $15 million, consideration to do that scheduling. So really the value of basketball was about $1 million because we're going to get 14 for the scheduling alliance on the football side. So, the dollars weren't as meaningful, and it felt like we were giving up a lot of, who we are, who we've been, and to extend a lifeline to them. And I think ultimately those kind of conversations and then what they felt was in their best interest, I think they were able to do what they did with the WCC at a lower number than the million that they were going to commit to us, to open up the basketball options. And so I think we're all satisfied in what's happened and where we're at.
Any word on conference dates for next year? I know a lot of fans, myself included, like having that schedule out so we could start planning for next fall.
Not yet, Mike. We've kind of made a commitment over the last two cycles to try and at least get identified weekends with home and away opponents established, knowing that, you can slide from Saturday to Friday or whatever is happening based on TV's needs. So I would expect that, it's usually, we might have a draft in hand that's not ready for public consumption in early March, and then, probably ready to publish late March, early April is usually, I think, the time frame that we're on. So, and we always ask the conference office, can we move it forward? Because, we like to work with certainty, and it helps us in our planning. And as we market season tickets and many plans and group sales and all those things, the more information we can share, the more likely it is we can close sales.
Are you happy with the Oregon State addition next year?
Yeah, I thought that worked out well. We got the inaugural game in Canvas Stadium. That first game against Oregon State was a home game. If you remember, that was a home and home. We
Lost.
the return blew up in 2020 when COVID kind of disrupted all sorts of things. We never really got the game back on the schedule. There's never really been discussions to do that. I don't think we'll ever revisit it. So in a way it feels like, we're doing something that we would have been committed to anyways. I think they'll be a great opponent. I've actually never been to Corvallis. I mean, I worked in the Pac-10 for two football seasons, but never made it to Corvallis. So for me, it'll be a new campus to see and explore, and should be a fun game for us.
You was there any heartburn that you know of across the league with maybe some of the games that teams lost? Maybe they lost a more manageable opponent, for instance, and then instead are going on the road to play, like watch. Was there any like heartburn with any situations that you know? I mean, it seems like you're not gonna be able to make everybody happy with the situation, but for us it
No.
seemed to work out. I wonder if there was any bad issues across the league.
Not that it was really, that reached it to any discussion within the ADs. There may have been, a select campus or two that, opened up direct dialogue with the conference office about, what they saw as maybe not, ideal for them. So yeah. I think Boise State, they had games scheduled with, I think it was Oregon State or Washington. I think it was Oregon State, and that, or maybe it was Washington State. I just know that they were working on some things so that if it was Washington State or Oregon State, they could preserve their rivalry, either the Civil War or the Apple Cup. But no, I don't remember anyone saying, that they were experiencing a great deal of unhappiness about the way things
That's good.
panned out.
Well, I want to get your opinion on the ugliness of college football this year, particularly, I mean, it really came to a head in the bowl season. I've never seen a bowl season like so meaningless this year. Obviously, the two playoff games were nice, but I think the combination of NIL and players opting out for the NFL and players transferring because of the transfer portal window before bowl games just made a lot of these games really bad. And I just wonder it with all the fallout that's happened And a lot of grumbling when you're starting to hear it from coaches and athletic directors as well, is do you envision that there's going to be some sort of push for reform in this area and maybe see if the NCAA will actually do something to police all this business like they're supposed to be?
Yeah. Well, much of it is sort of outside the NCAA, right? Because they don't have a lot to do with football, particularly the CFP, and then, you know, how that trickles down into the bowl games. You know, I guess, you know, we could monkey with transfer windows and when the portal opens, when the portal closes. I probably shouldn't jump up on the soapbox, but, you know, I mean, everyone wanted a lot of flexibilities for students to move freely within the marketplace. Everyone, you know, and I'm not going to ever challenge or disagree with, you know, the true pure concept of NIL. But, you know, everyone felt that was a great idea. But I think in a lot of ways, you know, the amateur model that we used to practice that was very much focused on education is being challenged in so many ways. And it's always the unintended consequences that get revealed that, you know, begin to make you question, you know, where you are at and how you got there. And, you know, I don't know. Sometimes I feel like the media, you know, it can't be really called sometimes a true partner, but I think they're one of the most disingenuous actors in this whole space, because they've pushed it, you know, the narrative of, you know, unpaid labor, you know, these kids deserve more, you know, it's not enough. And I get it, you know, when you move in the direction that we have for, you know, coaching compensation and even administrative compensation, you know, there's got to be some consideration for the students beyond maybe the traditional scholarship. But, you know, all of those forces delivered what we're seeing right now. And I don't know if there's enough consensus amongst decision makers to try and tighten it up and put more guardrails around it and more rational, you know, framework. But it seems like every time we make an attempt to do that, then the plaintiff attorneys step forward, find a class action group to mobilize a lawsuit, and then we're back where we once were before. So I have no answers for you. And I'm as disappointed as anyone. I hope that with the expanded playoff, you know, as those games get integrated into the current bowl system, that maybe it brings back some more, you know, life to the postseason, that you know, creates more meaning. And I also think, you know, now I say this, we haven't made a bowl game in, you know, several seasons, but hopefully we get that corrected next year. You know, I look at what I saw with some of these programs, and it, in some ways, it's a statement on the health of your culture. You know, if you've got students that are really, truly committed to playing and representing their school and, you know, being playing alongside their teammates and the brotherhood that's hopefully shaped by football, then why would you want to give up an opportunity to compete with your teammates? You know, I mean, you spend your whole life, you know, trying to put yourself in a position to play college football. So why would you bypass one more opportunity to do that? So I hope what we have here at CSU, when we reach that moment in time, that, you know, we'll see everyone actively raise their hand and say, absolutely, you know, I want to play this game. I want to embrace an opportunity to compete with my teammates and under the tutelage of these coaches and go out and earn a victory.
Well, you said it perfectly. Actually, Mike and I hosted Brady Hull's show the other day, and when in his absence, and I made a similar comment. I just don't understand, if you live for football and this is a love of yours, how do you sit out the final possible game of your collegiate career and abandon your teammates? And, you know, a lot of these guys are probably making NIL money and they're sitting out like the biggest game of the last game of the season, and they're playing the 12th game and the 11th game of the season that aren't any more meaningful than a bowl game. So it's very, very strange. It's football's got itself in a really bad spot right now. And can the playoff change that next year and improve things, I think it'll have a positive effect. But how will the rest of the bowl games, you know, be impacted? So who knows?
Yeah. And maybe, you know, maybe they do develop a, you know, some kind of model that allows, you know, NIL participation, and that's an incentive for someone to go ahead and play the game. You know, I mean, that's been talked a lot about. Nick Carparelli, who's, you know, oversees the non CFP bowls, you know, he floated that model, I think, last week a little bit, sort of talked about it and talked through it, and even adjustment in the transfer portal window. You know, they're not going to make that decision just because of the bowl games, but, you know, I think everything's subject to scrutiny and a little bit of, you know, tweaking to try and keep it going. You know, I think college football is, you know, my opinion is, you know, one of the best experiences for the participants and for the people that, you know, choose to spend their time and resources, you know, as an option for, you know, the forward facing sports entertainment piece. So I hope that, you know, as we tinker with it, we don't erode and destroy it and make it something less than it is today.
So we had Chad Savage on a few weeks ago, and he's really engaging and fascinating. And we had asked him kind of the importance of the Green and Gold Guard and NIL and what that does for helping retain student athletes. We've had you on, and you've also spoke about that, but you're also in a unique situation where you've got yourself, you've got people on staff that are probably held to a metric of fundraising, right? Where their role is to bring in money for the athletic department. And we're asking fans to get involved with Green and Gold Guard. We're asking fans to donate to athletics. How do you balance, you know, the importance of each? Because you're probably like, hey, we need money in athletics. We understand the importance of the Green and Gold Guard and money going to the NIL and the student athletes. How would you tell a fan, you know, where they should place the importance if they had to choose one or the other?
Yeah. I'm going to back up and kind of offer a broader perspective and then get closer to the answer that you're looking for. You know, you did, I think, frame it really well. We, you know, there's still this traditional experience of being a student athlete that we've got to figure out a way to continue to fund and enhance, right? So that's going to require resources, and, you know, probably more than we have today. We'll need more tomorrow, right? You know, we want to make the very best traditional experience we possibly can. And at our level of play, and I hope people understand this and take it the right way. You know, we're not competing for roster members that Alabama is looking at, or Florida, or Georgia, or Texas, or Michigan, or Ohio State, right? I mean, there is still a hierarchy out there of, you know, highly traditioned brands that have demonstrated decades, if not decades, centuries or more of performance, that they're going to fill their rosters with the highest level of talent in the NIL world, just like they did before NIL. And for us, I think where NIL plays a big, big role is, you know, we're always going to find great kids, high character kids. We're going to put them into our systems on any one of our rosters. We're going to develop them as students and athletes. And we've got to see if we can get enough community response to support NIL where we make the experience sticky. I'm convinced that, you know, for a lot of our students, they hit the fourth week of the month and the budget's tight and they're waiting for the next stipend check to be delivered to them via direct deposit. And if there's NIL activity in the community that can support them, then that extra $500,000, $1,500, $2,000 a month, whatever it might be, bridges that gap and takes the sting away. And when they evaluate the entire experience, it's going to make them, I think, hesitant to disrupt all these knowns. You know, I love my coach, love my teammates. I believe in what we're trying to do. We're winning. Love Fort Collins. Love my degree program. You know, I've got a circle of friends outside of athletics that appreciate me as a person. And, you know, I've got enough NIL that every you know, fourth week of the month, I'm not, you know, eating ramen noodles and trying to figure out, you know, where my, you know, how I bridge the gap to my next scholarship check. And I think that stickiness is what will allow us to preserve our rosters and the talent that we develop. And that's where we've got to get our community to understand. And I've talked to so many people, you know, I don't think there's not a lot of folks that want to help a young person, you know, buy an exotic vehicle, right? You know, but and maybe that's going to occur at Alabama or, you know, other places, but I don't think that's the identity that we can shape around our athletic program. And then I think there will be occasions where we have uber talented kids that really differentiate themselves from other teammates in higher profile positions that, you know, could take a really attractive offer at another school and pivot out for, you know, a big NIL payday. And in those cases, I think we've got to figure out a way to get the community to respond to not match that kind of, you know, activity, but at least do something probably a little more enhanced. So again, it makes it sticky and because I think, you know, we've seen examples all the time now, not all the time, but, you know, in the last 2-3 years where, you know, a student leaves and then they aren't even playing, right? They're not even getting the reps that, you know, help them develop and, you know, find satisfaction as being a student and an athlete. And certainly they're not getting enough reps to develop to, you know, play at the next level. You know, I mean, survey our basketball program. You know, we had a player leave last year that I haven't checked lately since the conference schedules have ramped up, but, you know, he was getting, you know, less than a third of the minutes that he was here, you know, and probably won't see much conference play. So I think as those stories build, you know, it begins to make people hesitate a little bit and think twice. You know, I really like it here, really like my coach. I have a very fulfilling defined role, and do I want to risk it all for the promise of higher NIL, you know? So, that's a long answer, but, it, you know.
It's not. Yeah, let's put here's a little bit. We've had enough NIL talk. Joel, stop it.
Sorry.
Any updates on the soccer facilities?
Yeah, I'm looking out at it right now. I mean, you know, it's the time of year where grass is brown, but I think the sod on the half of the competition field that we had to replace is taken, and, you know, so it's in great shape. It'll be ready for spring and summer and, of course, fall play.
That's good to hear. That's good to hear. It was, I mean, the whole setup's pretty cool, but it'll be awesome to be back over on that side where the stands are at. As we look back on the fall, what were some of the things that you saw that, you know, we wish that we could have done differently, had different outcomes, and what were some of our highlights for you in the fall competition across all sports?
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, we women's cross country won the conference championship, so that was remarkable. You know, it's something we want to at least earn one championship every year, you know, hopefully multiple, and we got some opportunities this spring to do more of that. Volleyball under, you know, first year head coach Emily Cohen, I thought she has high expectations for her program. You know, she wants to meet and exceed past team performance, you know, so she's working hard to kind of get that level of play and build the talent on her roster to do that. You know, I thought it was great that she was able to finish, you know, as one of the top teams in the regular season and then, you know, make it into the championship game. You know, shame that we weren't able to close out and, you know, move into the NCAA, but you know, really felt very satisfied by her and her performance, and she'll continue to build it in the right way. You know, soccer, this was the third season under Coach Hagan, and to make the championship game was a tremendous step for us, and, you know, again, you know, wished we could have figured out a way to win that final match, but something to truly build upon. Football. I reflect back on the season and, there's probably two games that, could have, should have won. And there's probably two games we could have, should have, different outcome than the win we had. So you just got to take it as it is. I think Jay has done a great job in putting the foundation in place for what I believe is going to be future greatness for this football program. I feel like the health of the roster, as far as talent and distribution of numbers across the position rooms, are where they need to be. I think they've really developed and flexed the muscles of leadership in each of the position rooms. And there's a lot of solidarity across the leadership council and a lot of buy-in and understanding of what it's going to take to win in a high level. So I'm proud of the football program and where they're going, but, still very disappointed, just as Jay and the team is, that we didn't find a way to win the Hawaii game so that we could have extended the season and gotten 15 additional practices and a chance to compete, because I think that could have been a huge step for the development of this program for 2024. But now we're just going to have to figure out a way to, squeeze that level of development out of the spring practices and what's going to occur as they train against each other.
You got a hard stop here in a few minutes?
No, I'm actually good. So,
okay, good. I got a couple more questions I wanted to squeeze in, a couple questions from guys on the board. Someone had mentioned, and we hear this a lot too, but someone said that there is a dearth of an absence of good quality CSU athletics gear, throughout the state at stores. And I haven't noticed this. I usually buy mine online. I'll go to the CSU bookstore somewhere where all the best selection is. But what drives that? Is it our partner, Under Armour? I mean, they're not putting out enough items, or how do we get a better selection in places outside of the CSU bookstore? Is that anything that's on CSU to help with?
It's like so many things, and people hate it when I say this, but there's a shared responsibility, right? We work hard to get vendors to produce licensed products. We work hard to get retailers to stock product. We've got a partner in that effort, the Collegiate Licensing Company, that helps us. We had for a while an in-house resource that worked, that was a CLC employee, but really, a position that was funded by us to try and grow our presence at retail and try and expand into sort of lifestyle offerings, kind of beyond sideline gear. COVID was, that was an area that we needed to economize in a little bit. We haven't looked to, replace that position, but ultimately it's going to be the consumer demand that's going to pull it through the channels and begin to, create demand where it isn't right now. And so if people say it's not there and it's not present, if you took Econ 101, there's a supply and demand curve and whatever's at retail right now needs to be purchased so that, they see that they're going to make their money from those items. And that requires people to, if you walk into a store and you're a Ram and you don't see what you want, then, go talk to someone, and ask them where it is and why it's not there. And those kind of conversations over time can help create leverage for us as we look to expand. We've got the Ram Zone, we've got, the online presence for the Ram Zone, the bookstore. We don't have the same campus partnership that we once had, but they're still, doing good work over there at the Laurie Student Center, and they have an online presence, I think, too. It's as I said before, it's kind of a shared responsibility. And Under Armour's changed their model quite a bit too. So they're not, you know, they're not in the same position, I don't think, at this point in time, where they want to, you know, risk putting a lot of things in the channel that may not move. So, you know, they're back to sideline gear. And, you know, interestingly enough, you know, we're one of, you know, Hawaii used to be Under Armour, South Florida was. So they don't have that many schools that have green as their primary color in their partner portfolio. So, you know, you see a lot of non-green items that we embellish with Ram head logos and things like that, just because we can't get the blanks, you know, from Under Armour because they're not producing them any longer. But they're still an incredible partner, and you know we need them in every way, because they do a tremendous job of outfitting our teams and providing us with, you know, footwear and cleats and uniforms and all that stuff. So
and then one last one here from John in Denver. He was asking, do you guys have a specific plan? I know there's some things that we see when you come down and visit, and you've got coaches' caravans and things like that, but do you guys have a plan around engaging with the Denver fan and alum base? And what are some of the specific things that you guys may have in mind for this year?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Marcus Pallas is our new senior associate AD for development. I think this is month 7 for him. He's a Ram grad. Played football as a walk-on for a couple seasons. He's done a really nice job and you know, kind of rebuilding our development presence. And Denver is going to be an important place for us to be. So it'll begin really with a lot of individualized meetings and small groups, you know, to kind of get things jump-started in Denver. And then as we kind of create momentum, you know, we're very open to, you know, trying to create larger format groups. But, you know, those are good for engagement, right? But they don't really yield much of a return as it relates to trying to, you know, build resources for our student athletes. So, you know, I don't know that we'll get overly invested in large group activities. I mean, where we find the most benefit for our student athletes, and that's who we feel most obligated to, is, you know, having conversations about individualized support. You know, what can you do personally to help CSU athletics and our student athletes achieve their goals? So, you know, and then, you know, the broader piece of that, you know, we have great partnerships with the Alumni Association and Institutional Advancement. So we're always looking for ways to, you know, to extend ourselves into Denver, you know, through those partnerships, those campus partnerships. But, you know, I mean, I'll go talk to anyone. You know, I mean, if you've got a group of people that are part of Ram Nation that are active on the message boards that are asking for, you know, access, you know, all, you know, some weeks that I'm in Denver 4 days a week. So, I mean, I don't, you know, I'm available. People may not want to hear from me, though. I don't know.
You never called Mike or I, at least not me. Maybe Mike's getting an invite, but I'm just totally sitting my, I'd love to have lunch with you, Joe.
We do this. I thought this might be enough.
Hey, man, we don't always have to talk like CSU grind all right. Questions.
All right. Well, we'll make a point of having a lunch.
That sounds great.
Are you buying?
That's on gold.
Am I buying? I can buy, Bill. I can buy. Do you like Taco Bell?
I love Taco Bell. give me a ultimate burrito or bean burrito any day.
Yeah, it's always good at 2 a.m.
Open to ideas. You know, I guess that's the easiest way to put it. You know, Marcus has a team now that, you know, a few pretty young fundraisers, but, you know, we're out there, we're available. We want to engage. We want to, you know, we want to help everyone feel, you know, a level of connectivity to CSU athletics for sure.
Mike, you got anything else? Did you want to try to parse through economic stats
question? No, sorry, bud.
Save that one for next month.
Way too long of a question.
We'll save that one for next month.
You know, we're working on football renewals right now. So, you know, if people have creative thoughts and ideas around, you know, opportunities there, you know, hang on. I'll show you guys. Your listeners won't be able to see this, but I've got this book. Can you see it?
Winning Strategy?
It says winning
It's blurry.
is not a strat. Winning is not a strategy.
Oh, winning is not a strat. We said last month that winning is a strategy.
Well, that's right. So it was because of this book, right? So it's a friend of mine who wrote it, a game-changing approach to driving attendance. And the title is Winning is Not a Strategy. And I've, as I told you last time, I've come to believe that winning is the only strategy. So as you want more outreach and you want more engagement, you know, our main goal is to put every one of our teams in a position to win, because I'm convinced that's the primary motivator of everyone. We had what, almost 7,200 people in the building for Adams State. You know, I mean, that was remarkable, and that doesn't happen unless the team's performing at the level they are, right?
100%.
8:30 kickoff against New Mexico. Like I said, you know, 5,100 announced, but it felt bigger. You know, I would expect that, you know, the remainder of the season, you know, if we can continue to win, you know, we're gonna have more than, you know, two or three sellouts. So that'll be outstanding. And we got to do that in football. I understand it. Jay understands it. You know, and I think what we have done though is we built the infrastructure within the department to capitalize on those inflection points when our teams do perform.
One thing I'll tell you this,
yeah.
For those, if you need tickets, if you want guaranteed tickets for basketball at the end of the season, get one of those flex passes. Those are awesome. They got 5, 10, 20 game flex passes. If you don't have tickets already, that'll guarantee you a spot in the door. So
And, you know, I kind of started this segment with the, you know, the idea of football renewals, you know, but we really, you know, we've got to encourage everyone to renew. You know, there is a deadline, and if you miss the deadline, you know, you could still probably renew your tickets, but you're going to renew them at a higher season ticket cost. We made a commitment to our existing season ticket holders that we weren't going to raise prices, and that's only effective until we reach that renewal deadline. And at that point, you know, for people that are buying tickets for the first time or they failed to respond by the deadline, it's going to be a higher season ticket price. And, you know, strong reminder, CU is in that season ticket bundle. And if you don't have a season ticket strip, if you're able to buy that ticket, it's going to be $130 for the game, that game only. So season tickets are the best value. And I hope people see that, you know, we've got to start to kind of build that base back up, and team needs your support. So be a part of it.
I think there's a lot of good things going on. You nailed it. It's sustained winning. Winning helps. Flash in the pan helps a little bit, but the sustained winning, which we're starting to see in basketball, is fantastic. And I think bigger than that is the people that you've brought into the university. I mean, the hires that you've made, Nico, it doesn't get much better as a person than Nico Medved or Jay Norvell, and the coaches that they bring within them, and thus the student athletes that they bring in. They're all very likable guys that you would want to root for, and I think that resonates. So that's something for you to definitely hang your hat on, Joe, because across the board in every program that we have here, it's just good people, and that will pan out in the long run, I believe.
Yeah, good people, good coaches, and they understand the importance of winning. They sure do. So
always appreciate talking with you, Joe. Look forward to seeing you here for the rest of the home games.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, that'll do it. I want to thank Joe Parker for joining us for 45 minutes and answering all of our questions as always. Really a pleasure to have him be willing to share his thoughts with us on a monthly basis. Thanks to Mike Rowe for his time as well. Thanks all of you for listening. Have a great rest of your week and weekend. Let's go Rams. And happy New Year.